Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Clack's Women for Indie podcast. This week we've been stepping into the breach a bit and helping out, first of all, our pals at Indie Live Radio, who were short of some guests for the Friday Yes Group show. We were at the Bomar anyway, having one of our Friday morning cuppa and chat. We were delighted to help out, step in, and it was good fun listening back on the Saturday night replay show just to see just how chaotic we sounded, but all great fun. Glad we could help. And then on Sunday, I found myself with a very short notice request to live stream a hustings at the community centre in Dollar. I've never live streamed anything before, so a bit of frantic research with the help of my long-suffering son, who without whom I would not be able to work any technology at all. If you're interested, we've shared that on our Facebook page if you want to see it. Music this week, yet again from the wonderful Mr. Snooze. And we also had a little bit of fun with some sound effects as well. So see if you spot those. But first, I began the podcast last week by wishing everybody a happy St. Andrew's Day and referring to the St. Andrew's Day Stones project. We're still getting people finding stones from that night, which is wonderful. There's still pictures appearing on the Yes Stones Facebook page of people turning up little treasures. So what I thought I'd share with you first is a little play, because Lynn, who's so actively involved in the Yes Stones project, was up at 5 in the morning out distributing her stones. And trooper that she is, she recorded some snippets of that experience, which I think are just delightful and capture some of the experience of sneaking around that we all enjoyed. I think that was a part of the fun of that night, was sort of sneaking around and distributing stones. So here's Lynn's early morning intrepid stone planting experience.
Well, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. I thought we were getting up at 6, having a long lie. But no, I've been woken up by my other half. The grass is glistening outside and we're about to go out and distribute our happy St. Andrew's Day stones across the wee county. We're now in the van, heading out to our first drop-off point. I'm questioning our sanity at getting up at 5 a.m. to do this. However, my one cheat is that when I got in late last night, having been seen a band, that I decided the simplest thing to do would just be to sleep in my clothes to save me having to get dressed in the morning. So that's what I did. So that's been the first domestic of the morning. Over the overzealous wrapping and the difficulty of getting the stones out, the overzealous wrapping. I'm kidding. It is cold. I've just been and put some out at the entrance to a cycle path that leads between Clackmannan and Alloa. And it's such a beautifully still morning and I'm having a good look up at the skies. The plough is there, or as I believe they call it in France, le casserole, because it looks like a pot, but I'll need to ask my French friend if she can explain this, or my French-speaking friend. That's another wee drop-off done. Some of the slates are going out at roundabouts where we know the traffic has to slow down when there's volume of traffic. And hopefully they'll see the slates there. It's not getting any warmer. That's us driving along to the next drop-off spot. It's just after 6 a.m. in the morning. Takes me back to my days of night shift as a police officer. You're always amazed at how many people are cutting about in the wee small hours, although this isn't wee small hours, I suppose it's early morning now. Still Baltic, still a lovely clear sky though. That's us now heading home. An hour and a half later, we've been around lots of little villages, placing stones out, some in the centre of Alloa. Hopefully people will be pleased to see them. Safely home, parked in the drive, into the warm house. And this time I actually will put my pyjamas on and go to bed, despite it now being 6:45 in the morning.
I love that. Well done, Lynn. On the Friday morning, we were at our usual haunt of the Beaumar in Alloa, and our conversation naturally turned to this week's big event, which, of course, is the election. We're less than a week before the actual election, aren't we?
Well, next Friday we'll have the results, won't we?
Friday's the 13th.
Coming next week.
Depends.
I might have been up all night.
Well, I want to stay up as long as the clap manager is on.
Yeah.
It's
usually
quite quick, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's normally smaller.
The problem is, if people are hearing this stuff for the first time, it's a lot of what Luke came out of. When we did the fact check, you look underneath it and most of it's not true.
He also said the education is terrible in Scotland, and he quoted the PISA figures. Now, Times Educational Supplement has said the PISA are useless, meaningless rankings, and their methodology is utterly wrong.
Must be talking about Boris Johnson, eh?
What they actually do is they ask some questions and they then use a computer program to predict how children would answer questions that they haven't actually been asked, and that's how they get their results. So he doesn't look at the figures where if you look at positive destinations for children in Clackmannanshire schools, for Lawrence Hill Academy it was something like 97% of children left and went to a positive destination. So they went on to further education, training, employment, apprenticeship. Why not use that as a measure? 97% of the kids are going to somewhere positive. And it doesn't mean they ignore the 3%, they still look to see what they can do for them, but to use the PISA results and say, oh, it's just dreadful. They pick and choose what figures they want to use.
Was anybody at any of these hustings holding Luke Graham to account on some of his assertions? Which we know.
Kate did on Tuesday night, but also previously as well, because he put a claim on one of his leaflets saying that he'd secured $70 million for the UK government for the city deal.
Which is somebody feed that back to this man.
So now he's saying. And I've secured $9 million.
That additional bribery thing you can only use for Westminster. It's just astonishing. I'm standing up there going, I'm transparent. And he's got this butter wouldn't melt expression.
And we don't know whether
he's spouting
that
things.
Transparent head of his.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think he's got enough brains to be canny enough to look after himself.
He's been asked as well, why does he just put Luke Graham? Why does he not say he's a member of the Conservative and Unionist Party? Yeah.
Do you know what I think we should do? See the Clackmannanshire Bridge? I expect he built that himself. We should petition to have it renamed the Luke Graham Bridge.
And I think he put every cobble in the Tron Court as well.
Yes, personally. Picking the litter up as he went.
Oh yeah, we love.
Oh yeah, that's it. Yeah,
he's a photo opportunist.
Ah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, he quite likes to find the food bank as well.
Yeah.
Look at me. Yeah. Oh, no, but my country brought in austerity. Oh. We've got food banks. I will stand at them. Sure. But because he was asked as well about how the constituency voted Remain, yet he went. Mm-hmm. And he said, but I stood on my manifesto, which was we would be leaving.
Yeah, but there's only 40% of the people.
40%, and not all of that 40%
would have been leavers.
For leave.
It's just a rubbish system, first of all, I suppose.
Yeah, it is.
It's just dreadful.
We went to lots of doors. You don't get everybody answering, but the ones that did answer, the vast majority had said they were SNP. There was a few refusals and a few Tories, and I was kind of like, you're working class people living in council housing, but you're going to vote Tory.
Yeah, I know. And by everybody's measure, I mean, if you think anything of feedback from somebody like Dominic Cummings. Dominic Cummings himself has stood up and said Tories don't care.
I mean, do you not think there's something very attractive about confidence? And the one thing with the Tories is they'll stand there full of their own self-importance, buoyed up by their private education to think that they are a class above and a cut above.
We know,
and people just think, oh, they know what they're doing.
Oh, because they talk about things like the hunting the snark and something or other theorem. They just throw these things out there when they can't actually answer questions. Boris Johnson in particular.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So people think, oh, they must be intelligent. Oh, we can leave it to them. That really saves me having to think.
People clapped him at the end of it, and you're like, he didn't answer the question. Mm. He went completely off track, and then people clap him. You're
But I think that's something to do with the entertainment factor, for one. But I think that's also to do with, I think, anybody who's got any kind of political allegiance, for some folk, I mean, I think we all know them, for some folk it goes then into belief territory, into kind of faith territory.
Yeah.
So they will cherry-pick the evidence, and I think we're all guilty of cherry-picking evidence in some way or form, but I think theirs becomes a wee bit more extreme, and then as soon as you talk about somebody's faith, it's so integral to them that they feel personally threatened.
Yeah.
So when you've got a Tory kind of tapestry of your economy is safe with us despite the vast evidence of the last 10 years, for example.
Trillions of debt.
Let alone before then, I think there's still this kind of convinced faith that actually people, the fear of that is the fear of loss of that, because that's their stability and that's their rock. And if that goes away, you've taken something so important from them. Then they don't know where they are, they don't know what they stand, they don't understand the world that they're living in.
But one of the good points I saw was somebody saying, if they're so good, why are they standing up now? Why are they canvassing what they can do? Why are they not saying, look what we have done?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they can't say, the SNP is saying, we've planted however many trees, we've done this, we've done that, we've introduced your baby boxes. Vote for what's good for you, but think about how your vote impacts on other people as well.
Because this thing sets the bar.
Think about the people in this election, the sort of the European citizens and international citizens living here, that live here, work here, pay tax here, that don't have a vote here.
If you're listening to this show on the Thursday replay, it's election day. If you haven't already voted, put down whatever you're doing right now. Vote for your country. It's the most important thing you're going to do today. On Friday, we were guests on the Indie Live Radio Yes Group Friday live show. Here's some highlights.
So, what have you been doing today?
Chatting about putting Luke Graham, our present current Tory MP, out next week, hopefully.
Well, I hope that definitely will happen. How's it working? Have you guys been out on the doors? Have you been chatting doors at all?
This is Lynn. I was out last Saturday. For about 4 hours canvassing, and all of the people we got in, say there was about 100 people that answered the door, it was about 70% had said that they were SNP. There was a few that refused to tell us how they were voting, and there was a smattering of Tories.
Oh,
I don't know if smattering's the right collective noun to use for Tory voters, but that's what I'm using.
That's quite a polite thing. I suppose a lot will depend on the area that you're canvassing in.
I think they found that in every area that they've canvassed, that they've had a really positive feedback. Because obviously this area covers Clackmannanshire, but it also covers South Perthshire, so they've been out Creef and Comrie. And
is your candidate John Nicholson?
It is John Nicholson, yeah. He's done lots of door knocking. Sometimes you have to try and drag him away. He does like a wee blether to himself or to potential voters. No, he's very good, and he will listen to what people are saying on the doors. Let them have their say and then respond to them.
I think he would relate very well to the voters, I would think.
Yeah, and he's a real gentleman. He's a real gentleman. Even in hustings, when there's been a little bit of, or quite a lot of, animosity between candidates, he always thanks everybody at the end of the hustings for their time coming along and their questions. So.
Well, maybe you should mention that. That was the next thing I was going to ask you about. I was at hustings on Tuesday night here in Glasgow, and I was just going to ask you. I noticed that in some constituencies we've had problems with the candidate, like in East Lancashire.
Well, the one I was at on Tuesday, only the Tory and the SNP candidate were there. Lib Dem and Labour both had stand-ins for the candidate. And there was probably maybe 40 or 50 people in the room on Tuesday night. One comment from one of the candidates was that the room's probably full of political hacks anyway, who've all made up their minds. So
you said there had been a bit of animosity at the hustings?
Just in people either not getting questions answered. People would ask a question and then the candidates pretended to answer but went off on a wee rant about something that they just wanted to say anyway. Not as usual, politicians don't answer the question that's actually been asked, and when faced with facts from people who work in fields of, say, welfare, coming out with comments like, well, I'm not sure, I'll look into those figures, having been told, well, these are the figures because this is a field I work in and I know what the figures are like. So, for example, the number of people who have appealed universal credit decisions, 75% are overturned. And that's only of the ones that have appealed. There'll be people that haven't appealed that have just accepted the decision. You think if they're getting it wrong 75% of the time, that something is seriously, seriously wrong there. I mean, we know that the whole universal credit is totally flawed anyway.
Yeah, it's a disgraceful situation. It's putting people in terrible, bad circumstances, yeah. In terms of the hustings, one of the things you were saying about the candidates not answering well, it really depends how well it's chaired, doesn't it? I mean, our hustings, as I might know what or not, was chaired by Sir John Curtis, you know, he didn't let anybody off the hook. You know, if they started off on a wee sort of tangent, he would immediately get, you know, quite politely but firmly get them back to, you're not answering the question, could you please answer the question that was asked? And he wasn't letting any of them off the hook, but it was quite something, really.
There was a thing they did, the hustings before the one on Tuesday that was much better attended. There was over 100 there. But they did a really weird kind of format, which I don't think really worked very well. They had the candidates all gave a sort of 2-minute speech, and then they broke into four different groups, and all the audience had to split between four, and then you got one candidate at a time to your group. But the thing is, you couldn't then ask one question and hear everybody's answers to it. So
you would only hear the answer from one person. Yeah,
that's
it. I don't think that's a very good idea.
No, and you couldn't hear what they'd said to anybody else, so it wasn't great. On the other hand, it meant you did get to stare them right up close in the eyes. And our podcast this week was, we'd done a fact check of the things Luke had been saying at that event, and when you actually go through it, there's so little truth
in most of what he says. He stands there going how transparent he is and butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. But then you look underneath what he's actually saying, there's not a lot of actual truth in it. And the phrase Walter Mitty was suggested.
Are you quite optimistic based on what you're saying about the sort of canvas results? Are you quite optimistic that it will be a game for the SNP? But we'll be looking out for your seat in particular. Well, obviously for all of them, but in particular,
I read an article on in one of the newspapers that said it was one of the 12 most important seats in the UK. In the last election, the Tories actually donated the highest donation from Lords, one of the Labour peers. So they are fighting it with all they've got. So I think we have to be quietly optimistic. We've got to be optimistic.
It depends what happens in Perthshire, doesn't it? There's an awful lot of rich farmers in the other half of the constituency.
Although the farmers came out for the SNP, so that was good. And he's got lots of great endorsements as well.
Good, very good. John Nicholson was saying that a lot of the farmers are really unhappy with the way Brexit's going to affect them, which is good.
That's good news. Hopefully,
we'll not
smell the coffee. Kevin's got a question here for you,
then. Well, I did have one, but very interesting what you're saying about farmers when they're doing the canvassing. I know it's not a referendum for independence, but did the independence get brought up and people were talking to?
Yeah, sometimes. Independence is brought up because I think the reason behind SNP is that our ultimate goal is to get independence for Scotland. So there are people who do have that in the back of their mind that they're still not sure about independence. But at the moment, there's quite a few people who've said, actually, I'm lending you my vote this time because I don't like the way everything else is going. And actually, SNP are the only ones that are standing up for Scotland. My husband actually looks after an 87-year-old friend and was visiting him one day, and one of his other octogenarian friends came around who said, you're never going to believe this. My brother, a further octogenarian, who has been a diehard Tory, had said, well, I've been watching the debates on television and I really like that Nicola Sturgeon, so I'm going to have to vote SNP this time. So that's somebody who has been, you know, almost like dyed-in-the-wool Tory has turned around completely because they recognise it's about looking, you know, for the future of Scotland and everyone in Scotland.
Yeah. We've got a few other examples of that. Marion, you've got one. Go on.
I'd totally endorse that as well, Kevin. Just speaking to a couple of people out and about this week, and again, as somebody who's been a staunch unionist all her life, and I've known her for over 30 years, is saying she's going to lend the SNP her vote too. So if this is the direction of travel of some unionist voters, this is a good positive direction for the outcome of this election, and maybe because we know that when people have started along this route, thinking about independence, they really don't look back. They want to carry this on. They start to ask all the questions that we've all asked ourselves over the decades, the years, and it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. So this is all hopeful. We're talking about small numbers here, but if the small numbers are any kind of reflection of what's going out there in the communities, then maybe we can, as somebody said earlier, we can live in the optimistic hope that this is the start of something much bigger.
That's how we're going to win it, isn't it? Just one person at a time, you know, like on a gradual basis. If every single one of us can see, I know it is anecdotal, but all these little add up, and that's how it gets one vote at a time.
I'm currently on LOA as a volunteer at Bannockburn House, but one of the volunteers there was a staunch no. And I was up visiting on Sunday and Alan Smith was there and she's told him that she is now lending him her vote for the SNP this election. She's not quite shifted towards independence, but however, we now know she's lent us the vote. We can now work on that. And surely once you see, you can't go back. Surely once you start to realise. So I'm hopeful, I'm really hopeful.
One thing we've been starting to use, the Scotland the Brief booklet is really good. It's up,
It's absolutely packed full of stuff. So we're gonna order a few more. I think Yes Clacks have got a big box full, and I've got one in my handbag. You've got one in your handbag, and they're quite good for whipping out when people have got questions.
Yeah, why ain't it the door? I was up at Business Scotland the other week. Keep up all that fabulous brilliant. Thanks again for speaking to us today. That was absolutely brilliant.
Not a problem. We love you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Late on Friday evening, I got a text from a member of the community council where I live asking for help with doing a live stream because they'd arranged a hustings in Dollar, which is in Clackmannanshire. He'd left it a bit late to do anything about it, so I thought, how hard can it be? And turns out, not very hard at all. Thanks to my son, who patiently guides me through the increasingly bizarre technological challenges I set myself, we managed to live stream the hustings, which was a very, very good event, actually. Quite well-natured. I think perhaps they're getting to the end of the campaign trail now and they're getting a bit wire-happy, perhaps. Very powerful, knowledgeable performance from John Nicholson, whilst coming across as passionate and compassionate. Whereas Luke, I think, was struggling. Particularly, he kept being challenged on Boris Johnson, things he'd said, statements he'd made, lies he'd told. And you can tell that Luke is just increasingly awkward in having to justify and apologise for the leader of his party. If anybody wants to watch the hustings all the way through, the link is on the Women for Independence Clackmannanshire Facebook page, which is a public page. But what I'm going to include here, there were contributions and questions from various of our ranks of the Women for Indy. I'll just highlight some of those questions.
Well, very much. Now, by way of process, I'm going to read out two written questions. So my first written question is, I have two primary age children who are beginning to ask questions about the kind of society they live in. They are looking for role models who, of all the current UK politicians, this is a good question, is your role model and why? Luke, would you like to go first, please?
My role model would be, and the reason why I ended up standing in 2015, because I thought I was going to wait a few more years to do it, would be Ruth Davidson. She is the politician that did bring me into, that got me going on it. And actually really kind of got me excited. Before that, it was David Cameron. I think some of the and I've said this before, some of his decisions, perhaps from 2015 onwards, I wasn't so agreeable with. But that was, I would say, in 2015, that tipped me over from kind of an active volunteer into actually running. That was Ruth Davidson.
I've got friends, as I mentioned, across all the political parties from my previous life as a political journalist. Actually, I've always really liked Ruth. Do you know what I was really disappointed with Ruth? Look, I introduced the Turing Bill into Parliament, which was to pardon gay men found guilty of crimes no longer on the statute book. And I know that Ruth has got a reputation for flip-flopping. So this is what she said when the bill was published. She said, although it was an England-only bill, I should add, she said it was nationalist grievance politics. That was the soundbite she came out with immediately. 12 months later, she voted for exactly the same bill at Holyrood. So, you know, lots of good things about Ruth, consistency, not one of them. I tell you who I admire at the moment. I admire all the Tory MPs who are prepared to give up their careers because they wouldn't flip-flop over Brexit. They knew it was bad for the country. And we stuck with the principles. I disagree with lots of them about lots of different issues. But as an example of putting country above party, they were hard to beat. On a personal basis, one of my favourite MPs is Keir Starmer from the Labour Party, whom I've known for a long time. I like Keir a lot for many, many reasons. But one of them is that as the former Director of Public Prosecution, he could have got into private law and made an absolute fortune. He'd have made a huge amount of money. And instead of that, he chose to become a Member of Parliament in a gritty urban seat on an MP salary, which of course is not a bad salary, but nothing like the salary he would have made. And he worked hard as a constituency MP. And I really admire that.
wasn't really a question. It was just when I heard the chap over there talking about the health service being dire, I thought, that's not right. And Luke jumped on the targets as a numerical downside of the health service in Scotland. And I just wanted to put it on record that I think with the treatment I've had, the health service in Scotland is fabulous. Can I just put it on record that the Tullibody Health Centre doctors are fabulous? I was literally phoned up at 1 o'clock, asked to come down at 3 o'clock, was in the hospital by 9 o'clock the next morning, and was a tumour removed and back to the home within 10 days. I cannot speak highly enough of the medical practices that we have here in Clackmannanshire. I love them for the work they do. And my daughter is a specialist nurse who has a vocational purpose in being a nurse. And nurses have never been paid enough, as far as I'm concerned, but they do it. And they do it to the best of their ability. And if folk like me are still surviving and putting pressure on the health service, I thank them for doing their best. So don't mention a percentage target when there are actually more of us going there. And the targets set are higher in Scotland than they are anywhere else. So if it looks like they're failing, it's only a numbers game. It's not actually a kind of true representative of what's happening, because if you get more people going through the doors, then the percentage is bound to fall because there's more people there. So get the maths right, and don't you ever stand up and say that this health service is dire, because believe you me, if you're healthy, you're lucky if you've never had to go through the health service as I have, and I take my hats off to every one of them. No question there. I just wanted to correct something that I thought was wrong.
I couldn't agree more. I've had exactly the same experience as you. I didn't know I was ill. Came to the health service here in Dollar, and 2 hours later I was in hospital because I didn't know I had appendicitis. I had fabulous care.
Thank you very much. We've talked a lot about decency and trustworthiness in politics. While editor of The Spectator, Boris Johnson published the following words: "The Scot, what a verminous race. It's time Hadrian's Wall was refortified, to pen them in a ghetto on the other side. The nation deserves not merely isolation, but comprehensive extermination." Luke, when we hear such vitriol from the leader of your party, how can you stand behind this man? And how can the people of Scotland trust that Boris Johnson and his Tories have Scotland's best interests at heart?
I don't condone any words like that, and the words used by Boris Johnson as a journalist, in writing as a journalist, and certainly not ones he should use as part of the party. But as I said clearly, I don't condone the words that Boris Johnson has used as a whole range of articles as a journalist. And as I said earlier today, politicians have to be very careful about what they say, and certainly when they are in roles of leadership, in whether an MP or as a senior leader of the party, they need to be very careful looking forward. And as you will well know, I certainly don't share any of those opinions or views.
As a woman, I also would like to say about Boris Johnson's comment about suffrage as well, where we were only given the vote because we were learning to drive cars. So I was quite astonished, and we would knock down our husbands. So that was another good tale. And he wasn't actually saying that as part of an article. He was saying it to, in full view, as just part of a conversation.
Look, you keep defending him by saying that there's a before and an after, that what he said as a journalist somehow or other doesn't matter, and that all that matters is what he says as a politician. It does matter. It matters that he said all these grotesque things over many years. And it's a slur on decent journalists everywhere to imply that this is journalism. I am a journalist. You can go through things I've said. I have never, ever talked about exterminating a race of people. I've never called gay people tank-topped bum boys. I have never called, as he did, black people Pekinese with watermelon smiles. This is your party leader. This is the man that you follow. This is the man whose policies and personality you defend. And we've talked about trust several times. He is utterly untrustworthy and he has abhorrent views. Judge him not for how he remains silent on these things. Judge him by what he said in the past when he was talking freely.
Well, that's just about it for this week. Quick reminder, if you're listening to this on Thursday and you haven't voted yet, get out there, go do it now. If you're listening to this on the podcast next week, then you'll know what the results are and we don't. So that's a really weird kind of thought to leave you with. Whatever the outcome of this election, we'll be back to discuss it and work out our next move. Just a quick plug as we're leaving that if you feel the need to escape from politics for a little while, why not try tuning into our Sunday poetry open mic and jazz slot? It's on at 1 p.m. on Sunday on Indie Live Radio. Fingers crossed, everybody, this is a huge week for us. We'll catch you on the flip side. Bye now.